is the Daf Yomi Masechet Review, Masechet Baba Basra, Tape Number 7.
For subscription information, write us at Daf Yomi Tapes, P.O. Box 831, Muncie, New York, 10952, or call 1-888-DAF-YOMI.
Magid Shia is Rabbi Yossi Heber.
This is the final tape of Masechet Baba Basra. It begins from Daf Kuf Samach, at the beginning of the final Perek, Perek Yud, Get Pashut. As background to this Mishnah, the reference to get in this Mishnah isn't only referring to a get isha given for divorce, but is also referring to any type of shtar used as a kinyan. And there are two types of gittin, quote-unquote, which are really meaning two types of shtars. Number one, a get pashut, or a shtar pashut, which is a simple piece of parchment which all the information is written on, including the typhus, which is the text, and the tarif, which is the vital information, for example, the date, and so on. And in this particular get, the edim sign on the bottom of the get, but all of the information is at the top of the get. So you have all the information written on the get, and at the bottom, the edim sign this get. The type of shtar, or get number two, is called a get mekusher. This is when the text is on side A of the piece of parchment, but the edim sign on the back, side number B. The shtar looks like a fan, where we write a line, then we skip a line and fold it over, and we knot it. And you could see a diagram of this on the side of the Gemara. This is a very complex shtar, which takes a long time, obviously, to put together. And the Mishnah says, by a regular shtar, which is called a get pashut, edim sign on the front side of the shtar, at the bottom. If it's a get mekusher, they sign on the back side. If by a get pashut, the edim sign on the back, or if by a get mekusher, edim sign on the front, the shtar is pasul. Reb Chananya ben Gamliel says, by a get mekusher, if the edim sign on the front, the shtar is still kosher, since you can convert it to a get pashut by untying it. Reb Shin ben Gamliel says, hakol lefi minig hamadina. The Mishnah continues by saying that by a get pashut, two edim are enough. That's all you need, and then it's good get. But by a get mekusher, you need three edim. If a get pashut uses only one ed, or a get mekusher uses only two edim, then the shtar, the get, is pasul. And the Gemara asks, what is the makor for the two types of shtars? This is learned from Yirmiyah, Perek Lamed Beis. Sodais bakesef yiknu, uksoiv basefer. This is referring to a get pashut. The words v'chasayim, which are the next words after uksoiv, v'chasayiv basefer, the v'chasayim is referring to the get mekusher. The Gemara says, by a get pashut you need only two edim, but by a get mekusher you need three. What's the makor for shtar mekusher? Gemara answers, there was a place where there were a lot of kohanim, and they had big tempers, so when they got angry, they would quickly divorce their wives. After they calmed down and wanted to nullify the divorce, it was too late, since a kohen is usher to marry a grusha. Therefore, the Rabbana made a takana of get mekusher, to give them time to calm down, i.e. because a get mekusher takes such a long time to write, because we write one line, we fold it over, we tie a knot, edim sign on the back, and so on. By the time this whole thing is written, it probably would give these kohanim enough time for their tempers to cool down, and then they would change their minds before it was too late. The Gemara asks, where do edim sign on a shtar mekusher? Rapuna says, between the ksharim. Rabbi Yirmiyo says, on the back part of the shtar, on each blank part opposite the ksav on the inside. The end of the shtar is indicated with the words sharir v'kayim. This symbolizes the fact that all the facts are in the shtar, and there isn't any more to say, i.e. this marks the end of the transaction. Daf Kuf Samach Aleph. When a person signs a shtar, he doesn't leave out his own name, but then sign his father's name. Gemara says different Amoraim used to use simanim when they signed their names. For example, Rav signed his name in the shape of a fish. Edim, who sign a shtar, must put their names under each other. So when you sign the two edim, you sign one ed signs, and underneath that ed, the second one signs. If a shtar is partially erased, it may be kosher, but at the end of the shtar, you must write sharir v'kayim. This marks the end of the shtar. Daf Kuf Samach Beis. The last line of a shtar must repeat over the basic content of the shtar, as a safeguard, so it's clear that nothing is written after that point. because if that wasn't clear, someone could add something else to the transaction at the bottom. The Gemara says the Edim must sign just under the text of the Shtar. If it's one line away from the bottom, it's also okay. But if it's two lines away, it's puzzle. If we have four or five Edim on a Shtar, and one turns out to be a Karev, a puzzle, we can use the remaining signatures to be Mekayim, the Shtar. Tafkuf Samach Gimel. How much space do we need with the two lines? Gemara answers, there must be enough room for the words Loch, Loch to be written one on top of the other. Gemara says a bezdin made up of chashuv, a people, would never sign their names on a shtar, which is just scribbled, but rather it has to be a shtar that is written very clearly. If both the nusach hashasimus of the edim are on an erased part of the shtar, it's a question whether the shtar is good. I, why not be chayshish that he'll erase it again and change the nusach? Gemara answers, a second erasing looks different than the first erasing, so we'll be able to see this if someone tries that. Daf kuf samach dalet. Edim, who see the makam hachasima is erased, and it looks suspicious, will normally refuse to sign the shtar. If the nusach hashtar is on an erased part, but the chasimas are on an unerased part, then the shtar is puzzle. A freshly erased shtar looks different than a shtar that was erased a few days ago. The minig of the goyim is even if a king ruled for only 1 year, they say that he is now in his second year, and all shtari mekusher are written using the goyish date of the king's reign. If someone said, I am a nozir, but didn't specify for how long, Subcha says, the zman, which we consider him a nozir, stam nozir is shleishim yom, is 30 days. Rav Dimi says, li'olam al yisaper adam b'tayvase shachavera, a person should be careful not to say too much good and too much praise about his friend. Shemitaych tayvase balidei ra'ase. If a person says too many good things, eventually he ends up saying some bad things. The Marsha in Megillah learns from Rashi in Erchin, Daf Tes Zayin Amar Aleph, and from the Rashbam here, that Reb Dimi only said that it's osur to give praise if a person says excessive praise. But he doesn't asur telling of one's good qualities, so as long as it's done in moderation, and a person doesn't say too many good things about his friend. The Gemara says there are three averis a person cannot avoid each day. Number one, thinking about chet. Number two, assuming after tefillah that Hashem will definitely answer him. And number three, lashon hara. Especially Avak Lashon Hara, the dust of Lashon Hara. Taf Kuf Samachay. Most people are nichshol in gezel because they rationalize in business matters. A miyut of people are nichshol in erva, but everyone is nichshol in Avak Lashon Hara. The Rambam explains that when Rav, here in our Gemara, says miyut barais, that there are a number of people who are nichshol in arais, he means that in each and every generation, a certain number of people in each community will commit sins of immorality. Because as the Rambam explains, the temptation of arayis is very powerful. The Rambam also says that the majority of people find that the yetzer hara of arayis is a very difficult yetzer hara to deal with. The Rambam also says that since coming to arayis is something that a person has to be so careful with, we have to be very machmir when it comes to halachas of yichud. That a person should be careful not to be secluded with a woman because the yetzer hara is so great. When it comes to that, we have to be very, very careful. The Gemara says, if a man said to a woman, marry me with a gold coin, and he gave her a silver coin, the kedushin is chal, because people are not that machmir. One aid on a shtar makes the shtar pasul midaraisa, because you need two aidim. If two people testified, but in two separate bate dinin, it's a bachloikis if they can be mitzdarif for one edus. The Mishnah. If a shtar chayv says, Ruvain borrowed 100 zuzim, which is equal to 20 slaim. Now really, 100 zuzim is equal to 25 slaim. So which lushan do we say is kaiveya? Mishnah says, the malva only gets 20 slaim, since we say ha-maitzi mechavero alav haraya. However, if the shtar says that he's borrowing or borrowed 100 zuzim, which is equal to 30 slaim, so it's just the opposite case. Now again, really, 100 zuzim is only 25 slaim. So which do we say is kaveya? So the malva only gets 100 zuzim, i.e. 25 slaim. Because again, we say, ha-maitzi mechavero, olaf haraya. Taf kuf samach vav, the Gemara. If a woman wasn't sure if she had a child five different times, or she wasn't sure if she was a zava five different times, normally a person has to bring a carbon for either of these, So she brings one karbon, not the other four, and she is allowed to eat zvachim. But if she had five definite births, she must bring five karbanos. Kuchisal Adaf here mentions and explains very well, we know that a woman is mechuyev to bring a karbon, a pair of birds, if she is poor, after she gives birth. And until she brings her karbon, she remains in a state of tumah and is prohibited to partake of kodshim. If a woman has twins, one karbon is sufficient for both babies. However, if a woman gives birth to a baby and before bringing her karbon gives birth to a second baby, or has a miscarriage, 80 days or more after her first baby, the Mishnah in Krisus, Daf Ches Amud Aleph, cited in our Gemara, says that she is required to bring two karbanos, one for each child. The Mishnah relates that Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, upon observing that due to the demand for birds, merchants charged exorbitant prices taking advantage of women in need of karbanos, made the following public declaration in Beis Din. He announced that even if a woman gave birth to five babies at five different times, she can fulfill her obligation with just one karbon. The Mishnah relates that this declaration had the desired effect on the bird market and caused a drastic decline in the price of birds by diminishing the demand for birds. The Rishonim discussed the halakhic basis for Rav Shimon ben Gamliel making such a declaration, exempting women of the required karbanos. The Rashbam says that Rav Shimon subscribed to the view of Rabbi Akiva, who according to the Rashbam was of the minority opinion that one karbon is indeed sufficient even for many childbirths. Rabbeinu Tam amends the text to read that Rav Shimon only announced that one karbon is sufficient to render the woman tahar and permit her to partake in kodshim, but he never entirely exempted her of her obligation to subsequently bring additional karbanos, one karbon for each child. This news, according to Rabbeinu Tam, apparently was sufficient to reduce the demand for birds, causing the price to go down. According to Rabbeinu Tam, Rav Shimon was only repeating an accepted halacha, as it is stated in the Mishnah, to people who apparently were unaware of the halacha, but he was not declaring anything new or novel. The Ritva suggests that perhaps Rav Shimon's announcement exempting women from bringing more than one karbon was indeed not the true halacha, but was rather merely a ploy to lower the prices. He announced it only to break the market and frighten the bird merchants, but in truth he never meant to exempt women from bringing multiple karbanos. Rashi in Krisus Daf Ches Amud Aleph writes that though the halacha in truth required one karbon for each child, Rav Shimon issued a ruling to the contrary, exempting women from additional karbanos because he felt that if nothing would be done to lower the exorbitant prices of birds, some women would not be able to bring any karbanos whatsoever, and they may eventually end up eating kodshim in the state of tumah. Thus, for the sake of restoring stability to the bird market, so as to enable people to afford to buy their karbanos, Rav Shimon enacted emergency measure and declared, contrary to the actual Torah laws, that one karbon is deemed to be sufficient. Eis lasas l'Hashem heferu torasecha is what he was relying on to change this halacha. The Magen Avram in Arachayim, Reish Simon, Reish Membeis, brings the Tzemach Tzedek, who deals with a situation where all the fish vendors in a city fix the prices and charged exorbitant prices, thereby taking advantage of the Jews who always brought fish in honor of Shabbos. But Tzemach Tzedek ruled that the Rabbanim of a city can and should enforce a boycott and prohibit the purchase of fish for a few weeks in order to force down the prices. This despite the fact that by doing so, people will forego the mitzvah of eating fish in honor of Shabbos, which we know is brought in Masechta Shabbos Daf Kuf Yud Ches. And the Tzemach Tzedek gleans from our Gemara, according to Rashi's interpretation, that for the larger good of the mitzvah, the Rabbanim could legislate to temporarily override a law from the Torah. Thus, in order to stabilize the market and bring down the prices to within the reach of the poorer population, the Rabbanim of the town are authorized to forbid everyone from purchasing fish for a few weeks. Finally, here in the Gemara, if one letter is missing from the lower nusach of the shtar, we can learn it from the upper nusach. But if two letters are missing, we cannot. Tavkuf Samach Zayin. If a person wants to give over his signature to a Beis Din, he shouldn't stick it at the bottom of a piece of paper, or someone could write a loan and turn it into a shtar of a loan on top of it. It would be equivalent today to signing the bottom of a blank check, where a person could then write $3,000, and then you'd be out $3,000. So, of course, a person wouldn't do that. The same thing, and this type of advice is given to someone on a shtar. The Mishnah. We can write up a get for a man even if his wife isn't around. and we write up a receipt for a wife on the receipt of her ksuba money, even without the husband, since it says chus for him, and we say zachin la'adam shalei b'fanav. But we must recognize them before we do that. In both cases, the husband must pay the sefer to write the shtar. The wife doesn't have to pay the sefer. It's the husband who pays because it's zachin la'adam. He gets the bigger schus and it's in his favor to do this. You can also write a shtar chayv for the leiva, even if the malva isn't there, because it's a schus for the malva. And we say zachin la'adam shalei b'fanav. But we don't write for the malva unless the leiva was there. And we see that money was lent, because here it's not good for the leiva if the shtar is written. Ein chavin ela b'fanav. And the leiva always pays the sefer, since all of this, i.e. the whole loan, is really for his benefit. The same logic that before applies to the mecher and the lekech as well. Gemara. When we say makir in the Mishnah, we mean that the name on the get is the actual woman referred to, and not someone else. So we know if someone new, who just moved into the town, requests a sefer to write a get, the sefer should not write one for him until he can establish his true name. Even if the sefer knows that he came into town using a certain name, he must suspect that he perhaps deliberately assumed the name of someone else in order to obtain a false get for that man's wife. Aladaf brings Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, where he left a tzava, a testament, cautioning his children, due to Kabbalistic reasons which we don't understand, against entering a marriage where one of the parents-in-law bears the same name as one of the children-in-law. Some Paiskim, which are brought in the Pisrei Tshuva, Evan HaEzer, Simin Beis, Sifkat and Zion, maintain that the many restrictions stated in Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid's Tava were meant solely for his own children and descendants, no one else's. Additionally, some Paiskim limit this restriction to cases where three successive generations of in-laws bear the same name. Others, however, advise all to abide by Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid's Tava and to be careful that the father-in-law and the son-in-law and so on, do not have the same names. If the son-in-law has two names, and only one of them is the same as his father-in-law, the Paiskim all agree that this restriction definitely does not apply, since their names are not entirely the same. I remember when I got married, this particular shaila came up, because my middle name is Noach, and my father-in-law's name is Noach. But since I have a name, Yosef Noach, so the two names meant that there's clearly not even a shaila there at all. The Chassam Sofer is quoted as advising a prospective groom who discovered that he had the exact same name as his prospective father-in-law to take on an additional name in order to circumvent transgressing upon Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid's tzava. In light of our Gemara, the Tshuvas Yeshuas Malka in Yeradeya Simen Tesvav adds that the Chassan should take on his new name and publicly put it into use, i.e. by being called to the Torah with his new name, at least 30 days before his engagement in order for it to become established as his name. If two men have the same name in the same city, i.e. Yosef ben Shimon, we must obviously be more careful when we're dealing with shtaris for one of them. Daf Kuf Samaches. If a man says the woman mentioned in this shaver, in this receipt, is not a particular woman in town, then later he changes his mind, we say his first edus is good, and the second edus is meaningless, because we say, kivan shehigid, shuv ein achayzer amagid. Once he said his first edus, the second thing doesn't mean anything. However, this halacha does not apply to a Talmud Chacham when it comes to edus regarding women, since Talmud Chacham normally doesn't gaze at women. Of course we know that Rav in Kedushin, Daf Mem Aleph Amud Aleph, forbids marrying a woman through a shliach without first seeing her in person, because the husband may find his wife's appearance repulsive, causing him to hate her before he even marries her. And the Rambam writes that a man meeting a prospective kala is not only permitted, but is supposed to look at her in order to ensure that her appearance meets his approval. Related to this, the Gemara says when a Talmud Chacham goes to marry a woman, he should bring an Amah Aretz with him to ensure that they don't switch women on him. And finally, the Gemara says, even if the Lekeach is buying the field as a favor to the Mecher, for example, it's rotten, still, even in a case like that, the Lekeach pays the Sefer, the fee for writing the Shtar. You would think that since the only time that normally, what do we say? We say normally the person, the lekeach, has to pay the sefer. That's because it's normally good for the lekeach. But in a case where the lekeach is taking it, it's really not good for the lekeach, but it's more of a favor for the mecher. You would think that maybe the lekeach should not have to pay the sefer. Still in all, the chiddush is that still, even in a case like that, he has to pay the sefer. The Mishnah. If a leiva paid off part of the debt, but they didn't write up a receipt, Instead, they gave the shtar halva to a third party. And Baleva said to the third party, if I don't pay up the chayv by a certain day, give the shtar to the malva, and you could ask me for the entire chayv. And the deadline went and passed, and no payment was made. Rabbi Yossi says he should give the shtar to the malva. Rabbi Yehuda says he shouldn't give the shtar. Gemara. This machlekes is based on what we say Rabbi Yossi holds asmachta kanya. If someone makes a commitment based on a tanai, thinking he can fulfill the tanai, but an oinus happened and he didn't, the commitment is still chal. Rabbi Yehuda says asmachta loy kanya. The Mishnah. If a malva has a shtar chayv and part of it became erased, he should bring edim who know the content of the shtar and the zman, come to Bezdin with them, and make a kiyum of the shtar. And the Gemara says, but the dayanim write in Bezdin that a certain person came with a shtar that was erased partially, and he brought edim to be mekayim it, and we were baidik the edim. If this was done, he can now use it to collect as he would with the original shtar. If they weren't baidik and chaker the edim, then he can't. If the shtar was ripped by someone, then we say it may be puzzle. Finally, a malva comes and says he lost his shtar chayv, and we have no edim that it was lost. Even if we have edim who witnessed the signing of the first shtar, we don't rewrite the shtar, since perhaps he didn't lose it, and later he'll find it, and he'll be able to come and claim from the leiva twice. Daf kuf samach tes. Normally, when a leiva borrows money from a malva, the shtar includes achrayas, meaning that if the loan isn't repaid, the malva can take property away from the leiva. Achrayas is like having a mortgage. If a shtar doesn't have achrayas, we assume that really it has achrayas, but the sefer just forgot to write it in, since no one would risk lending money without some form of mortgage collateral. I.e., we hold achrayas tos seferu. If achrayas was left out, it must have just been a mistake. According to Rav Ashi, we hold achrayas lav tos seferu. Therefore, if it was left out of the shtar, it was left out intentionally. We generally paskin that achrayas tos sefer hu. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says if someone gives a matana of a shtar to his friend, and the friend returns it, the matana is batal. The Chachamim say the matana is mekuyim. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, since we hold oisias niknis b'mesira, that a shtar is kaina at the time it's being given over, not at the time it's signed, that's why once he gives it back, it's batal. The Chachamim say ein oisias niknis b'mesira. And finally, Reuven has a field, and Shimon claims it's his, but Reuven brings a shtar and has a chazaka that he lived there for 3 years, but Shimon didn't complain, therefore the chazaka is good. Rebbe says we use the shtar. Rebbe Shimon Gamliel says we use the chazaka. The shaila is if a shtar can be acquired via Mesira. Daf Kufayin. Rebbe holds Ede Mesira Karsi. The chalais of a shtar comes from those who see it being given over, who see the Mesira. Rameir says, Ede Chasima Karsi. The key edim for a shtar is those who sign the shtar, not necessarily those who see it being given over. When a leiva is maida, that a shtar is authentic, does the malva have to be mekayimit? Rebbe says, it's not needed. Kiyam is not needed. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, the malva must still be mekayimit. If both a malva and a leiva are holding onto a shtar, Rebbe says, if we can be mekayim the signatures, the malva can then go and collect everything. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, Yachleiku. I doesn't Rebbe hold of Shnayim Eichsin Betalis, and by Shnayim Eichsin Betalis we say Yachleiku. Our answer is, even Rebbe is Maida, if the Shtar is Mekayim Mekuyim, we say Yachleiku. The only Machleikus, if we haven't been Mekayim, the Shtar. The rule is that if someone borrows money in the presence of Edom, he doesn't necessarily have to pay back in the presence of Edom. However, if he said that he paid back the loan in front of Pliny Uplini, in other words, he said more than he should have, then he must substantiate his payback via these witnesses. If he didn't say anything and he kept quiet, he wouldn't have to do this. But once he says he paid back the loan in front of Pliny of Pliny, then he has to substantiate that. The Mishnah. If we have a shtar chayv and the leiva paid back part of it, Rabbi Yehuda says we tear up the old shtar and write a new one for the second half which is left. Rabbi Yossi says we keep the old shtar and give the leiva a receipt for the half of the payment that he made. Gemara. Rav Huna Amar Rav says, he'll hold neither of Rabbi Yehuda or Rabbi Yossi, but rather a Bezdin decides what to do. Daf Kuf Ayin Aleph. If a shtar was written with a Gayusha date, And when we calculate the Jewish date, it turns out to be Shabbos or Yom Kippur. So therefore we know that it couldn't have been written then. We assume it's Shtar Me'ucher. The date is after the actual loan, and it's kosher, according to Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yossi says it's possible. Normally, when a loan is repaid, the loiva takes the Shtar Halva from the Malva. So the Malva won't try to collect money again. The Gemara then discusses a case of a Malva who comes to collect his debt, but claims to have lost the Shtar. The lender offers to give the borrower a shaver, a signed receipt, as proof that the debt is paid. Rav and Shmuel support the borrower if he is concerned that he may eventually lose the receipt, and therefore doesn't want to accept a receipt as adequate protection against a second collection, because later on the Malva could come with the shtar, the original shtar, which maybe now he found, and say, oh, you owe me money. And if he loses the leiva, loses the shaver, now, then he may be afraid, and he'll have to pay back a second time. Consequently, despite the fact that the borrower doesn't dispute the chayv, they exempt the borrower from repaying the debt until the lender manages to produce the shtar. So we say, ein kaisvin shaver. The halacha, however, follows the opinion of Rabbi Yechanan and Reish Lakish, who hold kaisvin shaver, that if the lender loses the shtar, the borrower is mechuyev to repay his debt, if he doesn't dispute it, of course, and accept a receipt as proof of the payment. Rabbi Yechanan holds that it would be unfair to exempt the borrower from repaying this undisputed debt just because the lender lost the shtar. Why do we say this? Because we basically hold malva leiva v'ish malva is what the pasuk says. Therefore we hold the borrower is beholden to the lender. Really, the one who lends the money is the main person here. He's the one who's doing the borrower the favor. Therefore, he has the upper hand. The malva has the advantage. Therefore, in a case like this, we side with the malva. And we say, kaisvin shaver. And finally, a shtar muktam is pasul. For example, if the shtar was written on Rosh Chodesh Iyar, but the date on it was earlier, but a shtar me'ucher is kasher, if it has a later date. This halacha only applies to a halva, but a shtar mekach u'memkar, whether it's muktam or me'ucher, it's pasul.